In the world I see, you were stalking elk through the damp canyon forests around the ruins of Rockefeller Center. You'll wear leather clothes that will last you the rest of your life. You'll climb the wrist-thick kudzu vines that wrap the Sears Tower, and when you look down, you'll see tiny figures pounding corn, laying strips of venison on the empty carpool lane of some abandoned superhighway.
Brian, it's only the weekend that the freeway's closed.
What do you mean?
It's not the end of the world here.
No, I was on the 405. There were no cars. It's time. It's the end times. It's happening.
For 52 hours. And then it's going to be open again. And then it will be normal Los Angeles freeway craziness.
It's not really Armageddon?
No, just Carmageddon. Ba-dum-bum.
Oh, right, right.
For those that don't know or who don't live on the West Coast.
Or don't care.
Or don't watch the news. Or don't care.
Like everybody that's not in Los Angeles, you don't care.
You don't care. Yeah. You don't care. But there is this thing going on called Carmageddon.
Correct. Basically, they took the worst freeway, the busiest freeway, the freeway that is always a perpetual parking lot. They said, you know what would be a good idea? We should close it.
The busiest, one of the busiest stretches of freeway in the country.
Yeah.
It is. They said it's one of the, it's if not the most traffic congested parts of a freeway in the country.
It's the kind of freeway that makes you want to punch yourself in the own face, in your face, basically is what it is.
And for 52 hours, it's closed completely.
Yeah, so everybody has been freaking out down here. We all got off of work early yesterday, which was great. I'm not complaining. If they do that, they can close
not
it all
me.
Every weekend they want.
I didn't get off work early.
Oh.
The hell.
Sucks for you.
Although everyone else did because no one was calling.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so everybody freaked out about it. Now it's happening. Okay. I'm just going to go to the movies tonight. That's cool.
Well, I've just got a little notice from one of our listeners. The 405-101 interchange is the busiest interchange, freeway interchange in the world.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's closed.
That's closed. But you know what's great? Now it's not so busy.
No. I actually drove here to Tech Bacon Studios this morning, and it was really freaky because there were no cars on the road. It was like I was living in, you know, the end of the world. The end of days were happening here in Los Angeles.
Strips of venison on some abandoned superhighway.
Wow.
Anyway, wow. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is episode 21 of Tech Bacon. The date is July 16th, 2011. Welcome back, Mr. Gold. Welcome back to Los Angeles.
Thank you very much. Episode 21, lucky 21, blackjack.
Yeah, very good.
I don't know.
Very good.
We won today.
Big winners here at Tech Bacon. How was your trip, real quick?
My trip was great. It was awesome. It was the longest I had been home in Chicago. I mean, I go home all the time, but usually right. It's for like 3 days. And this was the longest I'd been in Chicago in probably a decade. So it was great. I mean, I got to see a lot of people, hang out, have great food. It was just – the weather was perfect. Nice. Aside from me having a cold for half the time, it was an awesome trip.
Awesome.
Yeah. It was fun. It was really good.
Very cool.
I feel energized.
Yeah. Well, you came back at a good time because there are two like atomic bombs that kind of dropped this week. At least that I thought.
No. Big.
The first one, of course, being finally the U.S. launch of Spotify, which you talked about last week.
Yes. And this has been – anticipated for quite some time now. I mean, this thing has been around in Europe for years.
Yeah. And a lot of hyperbole getting, you know, dropped about the thing. Sean Parker, you will know him as Justin Timberlake in The Social Network and the creator of Napster, had the big article. He's an investor now after, you know, he invested recently after being around in Europe for, you know, a few years. And this
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I thought he had been.
No, he wasn't from the get-go. I don't know if it was just, but it was, you know, it's. Wasn't from the get-go, basically.
Recent.
Yeah. And he had this big article that he published that was basically saying like how this was going to change the future of music and this was going to reverse the, you know, the downward trend in the music industry. Quick side note, music sales grew slightly this past quarter.
Yes, yeah,
they did not. They reversed the downward trend already, but thank you, Sean Parker.
Just a tiny bit, but interesting.
But I if mean, you like, want to say, that's actually has the bottom been reached? We'll know more in a couple quarters,
right,
obviously.
But still, it's
interesting data.
Yeah, it's very interesting data.
But anyway, so he had this big thing. Spotify is going to change the world. You know, artists are going to get paid. People are going to share music virally. It's going to be amazing, blah, 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 blah. We'll get to that in a second. But, you know, Spotify, as we have discussed before, I'll cut that out, is a subscription music service that allows you to go and, you know, listen to, you know, an immense catalog. Not all the music in the world, but incredibly large catalog online. Basically, there's a free version, then there are paid tiers, you know, to drop out ads, and then like another paid tier to go and have it on your mobile device. They're $5 and $10 each in the U.S.
Yeah.
And there's also this component where you can go and, you know, post these – you know, songs you're listening to and playlists and whatnot to, you know, within that own social network, or sorry, they don't have their own internal social network, just within Facebook or Twitter.
Yeah, no, they don't. You can send messages to them. We'll talk about it more.
But it finally launched. Invites were hard to get. People were freaking out. And they, you know, the same thing they did with like Google Plus, and everybody does it. Everybody, you know, makes it, you know, a big buzzword. Everybody wants to get involved.
Right.
And so we played for a little bit. And what have your thoughts been? Because you've been using the European service already.
Yeah, I had used the European service. I had to connect through a proxy basically and reconnect myself every 2 weeks in order to use it. I didn't use it that much, but I wanted to play with it. I really was like on a mission one day.
I love the hardcore nerdery. That's awesome.
I've done that with Amazon UK too, to buy music that's not out here, which is actually very cool.
You can just go into the site for that though. There's
They recognize.
Oh, at the time when I bought. There's a box that I bought from the UK that I just didn't.
Oh, no, no.
I
proxy download.
Oh, for downloads. Okay.
Download. Yeah. For buying, yeah, you can just go on there and you have to pay for the shipping and whatever. But for download, you have to be technically in the UK. So if you set up a proxy and say you're in the UK, then you can download the music.
There you go.
Which I have done on a couple of occasions. And nothing, as far as I know, nothing illegal about that. Just kind of one of those things. So I'm buying the music. Just as if I got on an airplane, bought it over there, and brought it back.
Lawyer listeners, if you disagree, please write in.
Actually, I'm curious. I have his address
if you need it.
I actually wonder what the legal concept of that is. Curious, right?
I wouldn't be talking a lot about this too much on the show. I'm just saying.
Oh, God, for the two albums that I bought. I wipe my drives. So, yeah, I've been using it for a little while. There's a couple of things about it that I really like. It's pretty simple interface. You know, the interface is very iTunes-esque. Now, it doesn't have a web component.
Correct.
You need the application downloaded on your computer to use it.
Correct. And they're also mobile applications.
And they have a mobile application. A lot of the features aren't that new anymore because of these other music services. But a couple of, you know, novel features that they had when this thing was out originally in Europe is Wi-Fi sync with your iPod or your Android phone, which they currently have, because you can stop using iTunes and actually sync up your iPod with the Spotify app,
right? Because that's kind of nice. Well, yeah, and what it does, it basically, as well as like, you know, dealing with these subscription service music files, it also has access to all your local music files. So it aims to be like the storehouse for both the stuff you already have, you know, and
it puts it all in one place.
And you can also buy music from it. So it kind of like, you know, wants to go and take over and be like your primary music.
Yeah, it's
source.
Like a one-stop shop,
yeah,
which is very nice. The catalog is great. I do love the catalog of music. I mean, really, they have so much on there. Not everything, but it's a good selection.
Yeah. There are weird anomalies
gaps.
In terms. Yeah. Like there was, I like the Guns N' Roses. I grew up, you know, in the late 80s.
Just a little bit. You like them just a little bit.
And so I'm like, oh, okay. And I did not have them accessible at work for one reason or another. So I had the app and I'm like, I want to listen to Tacoma, the Slash penned, you know, hard rock opus. And so I went to go and get Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, right? And every single track on both of those albums was available except for Coma.
Now that's very strange.
And there was a couple things like that
must be a music publishing thing.
I think it might be a length thing on Spotify's side because there were a lot of songs I noticed were missing and they were like, you know, 9 minutes,
that's
10
really
minutes, 11 minutes. It wasn't consistent and I haven't been able to find anything about what the deal is to that specifically, but it was really weird.
I wonder if that's an interesting point. I wonder if that's the case. So as far as the free service goes, the free service allows you to listen to anything in the catalog with ad supported.
Correct.
So it's like listening to the radio with advertisements. It breaks in, you know, every few songs and
And the ads are so far all about Spotify, which is
I had a Coca-Cola
kind of
ad. I had a Coca-Cola.
Oh, did you?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, they're Coca-Cola. But yes, they are.
Yeah.
The free account also only allows you, as far as I saw now, 10 hours of music listening per month. There's a clock on the top. On the upper corner, I don't know if you noticed that.
Oh no, I ended up upgrading, so I did not see
that. Yeah, so on the top of the bar, it shows you how many hours of listening you have left in the month.
That is weak. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't. I don't remember seeing that on the European one, but I think it was there too. I can't recall.
Have you been using only the free service on the European
I'd only
one?
Yeah, I okay. could only I couldn't get the paid one.
There was you need a UK credit card.
Yeah,
or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
gotcha.
They did get me in that front, but. As far as my listening habits go for a service like this, if you like subscription-based services, it's a great service. I mean, you know, if you pay for the subscription, you get it on your phone, you can, you know, it's better than something, it's not crazy different from something like RDO or Pandora, I mean, and Rhapsody, it's pretty much the same thing if you think about the service-wise. You know, selection of music, being able to play on your mobile device, you know, all that stuff. It has a store in it. That's, you can get that on other services.
Right.
This, my biggest thing that I like about it is, number one, the free component, that there actually is a free component. I really like that. And I like the way it aggregates your whole music library into the one application.
Definitely.
You know, those are my key features. In my day-to-day use, the way I use a service like this, the free version it is, if a new album comes out and I'm not sure about it, I can go on and listen to it a couple of times before I buy it in full, which is fantastic. And there's nothing out there that allows you to do that legally at the moment. Right? As far as I can think of.
Turntable FM, you can, but you have to go and be in a room. There's other, not directly.
Right. Not in an easy way. I mean, yeah. there are some other services. I won't name what they are, but they're not. People think they're legal, but they are not legal.
Like Grooveshark and
– yeah.
Yeah. Well, Grooveshark just aggregates from – don't they just aggregate from pre-existing sources on the web and stuff like that?
No. They don't. They take from users. And so I read a whole article on it. It is completely illegal, even though they're getting away with it. It's really weird.
It's kind of awesome. I love it.
But that's also an app, right?
That's a web app.
Web app. Yeah. Okay.
Although I think there might be a discrete, you know, a native app component.
Mm-hmm. But in general, I really like Spotify. Is it the second coming? No. A couple of years ago, when none of these other features were available on other services, I think it was more appealing, and I think that's why it made such a big deal in Europe. But because it took a couple of years to get here, other services came out with similar things, and so it's not as big a deal as, you know, this incoming Spotify to the U.S. amazingness that it was hyped up to be, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I hadn't played with it until it launched in the U.S., and, you know, I have all my music – I listen to at work through, you know, Google Music or the Amazon Cloud Drive at this point. And so I'm used to having access to all my stuff just there. So that is no big, exciting feature to me. Having access to all different kind of stuff, you know, just to hear new things, that's really, really cool. But the notion that it's going to go and change everything, I don't really see how that's playing. I mean, Parker's article, right, where he said this is going to change everything, reminded me of that South Park episode where the gnomes were stealing, like, you know, the kids' underwear. And they said, like, you know, here's our plan for, you know, we're going to steal the underwear, ? Profit. And, like, that's what his whole plan was. Like, it's like Spotify launches, ? Music industry saved. Like, right, I don't understand what he is talking about, because the truth is, in terms of it being viral, right, this whole social component that's supposed to be so big, it's not well implemented.
No, but it is nice to have a little bit of that. I didn't really talk about that.
But it's nice to have that, but basically you can go and you can have if you're listening to a song and you want to share that, or a playlist or something, you can go and post it to Facebook or Twitter. You can't listen to that song on Facebook or Twitter natively. You have to link back to the Spotify application and have that downloaded. That to me is not an organic way of sharing, you know, media with friends. You need to listen to it right there.
But you can share it within – if you have friends in the app itself, you can share it.
Correct. But that to me is like – that's not a good way. That's so specific, and that doesn't give it an advantage over anything else like RDO or any
RDO
other –
RDO and stuff can't do that.
You can share on RDO. Can't you comment on stuff?
I think so. I don't think you can share playlists and songs and stuff like that. I think people maybe can follow you with what you've listened to, but I don't think you can share like that. Okay. As far as I recall, I used it for a little bit, but I honestly don't remember.
So I thought you could go and see when people were listening to stuff. Maybe you're right.
You can follow. It's different.
It's been a couple months since I was on there.
But like the fact that, you know, it has connect to your Facebook, and then it finds any of your Facebook friends that are using Spotify, and they become in your friends list, and then you can share a song with them, or you can share a playlist and they can play that playlist, and that's nice.
Right. And there's also collaborative playlists, which is really cool. But
that's very cool.
But in terms of the sharing thing, honestly, you know what it reminded me of? Ping. Where it's like it's a one-way share. It's not – to me, that's not really interactive. If it has to be within that specific application, that to me is not really going viral per se.
Right. I have a feeling that they're working – and this is just a guess, but just from the stuff I've read, they're working on deeper integration in Facebook. And I think you've read about that kind of stuff too.
Exactly.
And I think it's going to be – I have a feeling it's going to be what you're talking about, where you can share it on Facebook and then hit play.
And if you're a Spotify
member.
Yeah, it has to be there. And I mean, the other problem is too, I'm so used to web apps now for music. We talked about this before. Like, you know, iCloud not having a web app, you know, version was a bad idea.
Yeah, yeah.
It being a native app is great. And I got to say, for the most part, I love the application. It feels
it's
like
nice.
A very polished
it's easy,
app.
It's nice.
It feels, you know, well put together. It's a nice app. But at the same time, you know, I have friends that listen to work at, you know, music at work all the time. Mm-hmm. They can't, you know, right. they
can't download
down.
An app or whatever.
They can't download an app. So they're shut out of the service. That makes no sense to me. It made sense 3 or 4 years ago.
That's
it.
Yeah.
But the playing field has totally changed. So, yeah.
And hopefully, I mean, listen, this company has been very good at evolving. Mm-hmm. In Europe, you know, like a lot of these features, they added on. They've been refining their service. And I think they're at the point where they have their service very stable that they could probably experiment with some of these things now if they wanted to. Are they going to? I don't know. But if they wanted to. And I also think because of this free component, there's going to be an explosion of users. Just because why not? Why wouldn't you sign up for the free one? Who cares?
Here's what's interesting. This is true, but I mean, having signed up and being an active user, obviously, two different things.
No, I know, but it's like,
what I think for me is I agree with you, I think with the killer feature of the free, it's not desktop based because right now, legal or not, there are other options we can do that with. The killer feature in this, in my opinion, is mobile streaming. Last night, I was driving around with a friend, you know, forget where we want to go for dinner, right? And I'd upgraded to the $10 program. Just I want to go and play with it and get a feel for the whole thing. And we were driving around, and I have like my normal music on my iPhone. Sure, so I don't carry an iPod. I have like, you know, so I had like 20 gigs of music, right? But there are things you want to listen to that are funny, that are random. And so at a certain point, we're like, you know, we should really listen to Sussudio by Phil Collins. We should really listen to Invisible Touch. And so we kept going through picking like all these amazing and yet terrible songs and hitting them one after the other. And it was so great. Whitesnake, Cinderella, you know, Skid Row. That first Skid Row record, much better than you remember, I bet.
Really?
It's a good record.
You know,
it's
I kind of believe you.
but I kept going picking all these songs, and it was so much fun. And that was great. And that was this cool thing. And then I posted to Facebook about it. And that was awesome. That was completely great, and that to me got me so excited about music because it became that social thing. Because you had people in a car, you're figuring out what to listen to, you're all enjoying it, then you're sharing with other friends, they're commenting. That was fantastic.
Right.
Is it worth $120 a year? I don't think so.
Yeah, that's the thing.
So I've never really gotten the subscription idea. This really made me go and see the potential with it. Not as a primary source of my music, because I still want to, you know, and the only kind of media that I feel with, I mean, I'm all about access versus ownership being the new thing, except for music, because I think it is so personal and because you go and, you know, listen to it so often.
Right.
But in terms of access to this kind of stuff, I don't really need to own Genesis' greatest hits. Really.
Well, that's what I mean. But like, having been getting to listen to
going
all
the time is awesome.
Yeah.
But that price thing is a big barrier. And
it is.
It came back to what we talked about, I think, when we were anticipating what we hoped iCloud would be and like, or what any of these music stores would be. And you, that fourth component, like, you know, store, cloud access, all this stuff, that subscription thing for access and previewing and like light stuff, that is the key. That is going to be amazing when it's here. Spotify is cool. It's an add-on to the services I use so far. I encourage everybody to play with it, definitely.
Yeah.
But am I going to keep, you know, spending money for it just for that really cool stunty feature? I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. You know? No, I mean, I definitely – I'll use the free service. I mean, I guarantee it. And I'll tell you this. I really think what you were saying about the web app access is very key for this stuff these days.
Yeah,
I agree with you 100% because think about a service like Pandora, right?
Mm-hmm.
People use Pandora all the time. I was talking to somebody about this service and they're like, wait, so I could actually just play a whole album? And I'm like, yeah. They're like, oh my God, I would totally use it. There's times when I just want to – I'm listening to Pandora and it kills me that I can't just listen to the whole album.
Yeah, Pandora, like, so frustrating to be honest. I love the idea of the service.
It's great for certain things.
Yeah. I don't want to hear, you know, 10 songs that sound like Bob Dylan. I want to listen to Blood on the Tracks.
Right. And so – Spotify allows you to do that, and I think people are going to love that, but I think they would love it more if you just pulled up a web browser and were able to do it from there.
Yeah. It's a hard thing because, you know, being able to access your local stuff, being able to go and like save to there's also lots of features that you get having a native app. But, you know, it's, I guess it's that vision of how are people going to be listening to music?
Right.
You know?
Right.
I do have to say one thing. You're right about the app looking like iTunes. I was sitting and going through
totally
like,
looks like
man, if I had, if I could load up iTunes and, you know, demo songs
for the
whole song,
the day, man.
Like, that would be the most amazing thing ever. Because that's an app that I do have, you know, installed at every computer that I have.
Well, that's what they want you to do.
Yeah.
With this.
And, yeah. But, like, that would be so great. With the full featured store, like, you realize that's it's the one step away from the Holy Grail.
That is the Holy Grail. That is the Holy Grail right there that we want.
Yeah.
That's what we want.
I know. And in terms of it, you know, encouraging people to buy music.
I think it does. I think that does. For me personally, being able to listen to something first, I'm way more inclined to buy it.
It's tough for me because if you have a free service and I can listen to it whenever I want for free, that for me sets the value of the music.
Well, I think that's why
it makes it not worth buying, right?
I think that's why the free version doesn't allow you to do mobile and stuff.
Absolutely.
You know,
and otherwise, there's no way they can monetize
but
it.
But like,
right?
I used to, and it's so funny. We talk about this so much because the service was amazing, but I did that on Lala all the time. I listened to free albums all the way through, and then I would buy them.
Right.
I just did it because it, you know, and it did work the other way too. Sometimes I would listen to an album and go, I don't need to buy that one.
Yeah.
You know, but it, to me, something like this and other services replace kind of what you used to use, and people still do, but the radio for. Mm-hmm. When you would hear it, like, it's radio on demand. You know, like, this is, I can listen to the radio and I'll hear a song and, you know, I can use Shazam or SoundHound to tag it and then I want to buy it. Same experience, but a little more customized.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah. It's interesting. I don't, you know, because it's that thing, where do you draw the line? You know, how do you go? And that's the big question everybody's been trying to solve.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, yes, you can listen to stuff. Over time, does it go and devalue it? Does it make it
I wonder.
Not, you know, doing, having it all, the one thing about Spotify comes forward and their big selling point is the free service, right? So I feel like that kind of makes you kind of go, oh, I don't really want to pay and I'm not really going to buy. I'm going to listen and I'm going to buy from my other stores. If these other stores, if Amazon, if iTunes, if Google gets their store together and then they introduce that afterwards, mm-hmm. does that, if you're already dealing with a store, basically, that's what you're used
that
to
you
seeing.
Like.
Yeah. And they also have the service. Does that go and change the way you perceive those that free subscription stuff?
I'm curious.
You know?
I mean, it's not fully realized yet, so it's hard to tell.
Yeah. Or if you maybe, what if you had, you know, iTunes or Amazon, they say you can listen to this song once for free a month. So you're with your friends, you're like, I want to hear Susudio. Yeah. Boom, we can do it.
Right.
We can have that fun experience. Then like later on, you're like, want to hear it again? I can't. That makes sense. I'll do it.
Right.
You know? That to me seems
or if it's something you start craving more than once a month, then you would buy it.
Yeah, because that actually goes – that would be addressing the way – once again, addressing the consumer's needs of how they consume music.
Yeah.
You know, you want to go and have the sample for the fun, but if you want to do it more than once, then you can go and buy it. That seems where they're going to really know, find success is meeting consumers on the consumer's own ground.
Yeah, I think so too.
The ground of our needs, right?
Yeah, no, that's very true. That's very true.
Because that seems like a way where they could get away with it. That seems like something they could sell, basically. The technology companies could sell to the media companies as being
totally
useful.
I do have to say, on the Spotify side, when listening to songs and the ads do come in, it can be, if you do it for a while, it can be very frustrating. And I think they count on that to have people go, screw it, I'm just going to sign up for
that.
I'm just going to sign up for the service so I don't have to hear these ads.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't have patience, you're going to do it.
Well, especially if you do listen
to
music.
The weird thing is you don't get frustrated and say, I'm going to stop using Spotify. That's not the thought that goes in your head. The thought that goes in your head is, okay, I'm just going to pony up the $5 so I don't hear ads because it's so easy.
Well, plus it also depends like what you have going. I think a lot of people don't, you know, the cloud services are out there. They're not fully established. It's like, I'm not going to go to the business of having to go and like, you know, upload my stuff. And it's like, so you don't – like for me, at a certain point, I was like – because my friends hadn't gone and, you know, there was only like 5 or 6 people that had signed up for Spotify yet.
Right.
At a certain point, I'm like, well, I'm not discovering any new music because all the top 10 list that they were putting out was like, you know, Lady
Stuff
Gaga and
new.
Adele. And I'm like,
right,
I don't care.
Right.
So at a certain point I started listening to music I already own, which kind of is defeating the purpose. At that point, I'm like, I'm just going to go back to Google Music. But yeah, you're right. If you are like trading stuff back and forth, you could definitely see that. Or you're just, like I said, doing stunty things.
Like I really – we touched on it for a second, but the collaborative playlist feature.
I haven't played
– I can't wait for us to try that.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's one of the
things – cool.
And that's like this Google Plus problem too. It's like I have lots of friends that want to get in right now, but they only have a certain amount of invites. If you go and pony up, you get 4 or 5 invites I think to give out. They're running promotions with Coke has a promotion where you can get in.
Oh, yeah.
Clout is doing where you can get in.
And also if you want to go directly to one of the paid services, you can do it right now.
Correct. Yeah. You only need an invite for the free services. If you want to go for the 5 or the 10, you can just go immediately.
And I think I'm, you know, probably within a couple weeks, this is going to be completely open. It's not going to be a long invite only process.
Well, because
it's already successful.
It's
they already know the service. I think they're just doing this for a little bit of hype and
definitely.
Like they don't need, they don't, as far as to have the service working, they don't need to be doing it.
Yeah.
This
it's
way.
All about, yeah. It's all about
it's
building up the brand
thing.
And it's like in helping their launch partners and everything.
Which is fine. Which is fine.
No, it's been working well. So I'm going to go and actually sign up for RDO as well because I'm going to go and – because that seems to be the other like leading subscription
service.
Yeah,
I like RDO is a great service.
And I kind of want to try both of them on their unlimited plans and see what the pros and cons are.
That's a good idea.
And then check back in a couple weeks.
Nice. And we'll hear the comparison.
Yeah. But it's worth checking out.
Yeah. And if
not a universe changer though. That's my
takeaway. I don't think it – and there was so much hype around it. And like I said, I just think it's because – it was available in so many places in the world and not in the US. And when it did come out a couple of years ago, all these things were revolutionary, you know, so it was all this solid service, you know, best thing in the world. No, worth trying. Absolutely. You know, Spotify.com. Try it.
Definitely.
Let us know what you think.
Absolutely.
Curious.
And on there, you know, you can find us. I'm Brian Bishop, username BC Bishop, et cetera, et cetera. Although it's actually through Facebook. You can't follow people directly.
Right.
Which I'm glad I brought that up.
Can you not?
That sucks.
If someone's just a Spotify user, can you not follow them?
I don't believe you can.
I didn't
tried
see
to find people and I couldn't. And it's just the same thing.
But what's weird, because when I was using it in the European service, they didn't have the Facebook integration and they had that feature. So I wonder how that worked. Maybe they got rid of it or
maybe
something.
Maybe it is doing within the service, but they're just using Facebook to go and find those other users.
I think that's what's happening.
Right.
I think that's what's happening.
Because like I didn't add anybody. Basically,
me neither. I just connected to Facebook.
When new Facebook friends were joining the service, they would just show up on my Spotify friends list.
I did the same thing, yeah.
And I don't – you know, before we go move on, I honestly don't know the value of that either. I feel like I don't necessarily want to go – this goes back to the circles thing, right? I don't want necessarily need to share with everybody on Twitter and everybody on Facebook my – ironic music choices of the night, right?
You know, well, and you don't
have
to
go
there.
And do it with some of my friends, right?
Right. But you have to post something in order for someone to see it. Like they don't just see everything.
But I'm saying for it to show up to my friends that are on Spotify to show up on their feed, I have to post it to an outside source.
No.
Like if I want to share like a playlist, I have to go and post it to Facebook.
No,
or
you can just say share playlist. You can just make it shareable, public playlist.
You can publish it, but like it won't show up on the news feed.
No, correct.
There's right. Basically there's also a news feed in Spotify where it'll show like recent activity and whatnot.
Yes, you are
and
correct.
I would like to have that be just a source for just my Spotify friends.
Yeah.
Or
I think they're on the beginning of their social aspect to it. You know, yeah. It's good, but it's not the best.
Yeah, and it's given that it was. I was surprised only because that was the big promise of it. That was getting hyped so much.
Well, there was all the rumors about deep Facebook integration with Spotify, and if that does come to fruition, imagine if that does, where when you share it, you can play right in Facebook if you're a Spotify member.
Yeah.
That could be a huge, huge game changer for Spotify in this realm
and Facebook
and Facebook. I mean, I think that's kind of a killer feature, and if they do it, I mean, that's fantastic.
Big time.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So Spotify, rocking the internet waves this week, and Brian and I were. It was funny because the invites came out, and we're like, "Did you get one? Did you get one? Did you get one?" And then in my head, I'm like, "Oh wait, I already have one. Can I transfer it to a U.S. account?"
Right.
And I could, and I did it right away. And then like 5 minutes later, Brian's like, "I got an invite."
Well, it's great because you should get 11. You're like, "Oh, did you get one?" I'm like, "Oh, I've been on since 8 o'clock. What are you talking about?"
It's like, bastard.
I didn't have any invites to give you. That's why I did not go and share at the moment.
No, and I
didn't have any invites until I upgraded.
Any, right. The free one didn't give you any invites, but yeah, it was funny.
On the media tip, this week saw some very interesting changes from our friends at Netflix.
Yes.
And our friends, meaning people that I like and like to give money to, not sponsors of the show.
Right. Yes. Netflix went... they went aggressive this week.
Yeah, well, as everybody knows, you know, the streaming service they've offered recently, they it used to be a simple add-on for free to the disc service.
Right.
Recently they broke it out. There was a streaming-only package, I want to say, for $7.
Something like that.
But this week they decided to break it out into two discrete services, you know, streaming and DVD rental alone, both starting at $7.99.
Was it $7.99? Yeah, $7.99 because the combined is $16, right?
Correct. Yeah, and basically, so it comes out if you have the base level package, it's like a 60% price increase. I think
it's a huge price increase.
It's kind of substantive, and people have been very, very not surprisingly, they've been really angry.
Right, and you know, it's Facebook's response. I mean, Netflix response is it's kind of it's interesting. I kind of find it amusing because at the end of the day, well, their PR is like, oh, we care about the, you know, people that they don't care. They don't care. They're like, we know we're going to retain these people and we're doing it.
Well, plus the
question, the hard line is we've crunched the numbers and we know we're not going to lose enough people to make a difference with this price increase. So we're doing it.
Well, plus I don't even think it's about a price increase. I don't think it's necessarily about more revenue. I think it's about positioning for their future because I think
that's a big part of it.
Yeah. Because right now they're sitting here, obviously the DVD section, you know, more overhead, you know, mailing costs, you know, you need to go and make, you know, the envelopes, all this stuff actually costs money. We're streaming, you know, it's just infrastructure costs, right? Mm-hmm. But I think they are looking at a place where a lot of their content deals are expiring. you know?
Well, they, I mean, I think they've already started. I mean,
yeah, well, they've renegotiated some this year. Summer, they're having to renegotiate for next year. And they're putting, you know, the studios, the TV networks, they're putting the crunch on them, basically, because they know how much content is being delivered there. And frankly, in terms of, you know, bargaining position, I think it's worth a lot more to Netflix if they can say, look, we have, you know, this many – we have – these are all the people that are just streaming. Like these are the amount of customers that you're going to lose if you don't go and play ball and give us more content. You know, it's not – you know, because right now it's like, oh, it's the DVDs, whatever. It doesn't matter. And also they buy a ton of physical media. You know,
they do.
That is all like stuff. That's money that's in the coffers of these media companies, right? And so for them to say like, sorry, guys, we did this. Everybody jumped to streaming. We're not going to go and do it. And it gives them, you know, bargaining power. It kind of cuts their overhead costs. It's right now it's going to cause a ripple, right? Because people are used to streaming being essentially free. It feels better being free.
What they said was it was originally, you know, a couple dollar add-on for streaming. And what the perception turned in people's heads was – it was a couple dollars for streaming and an add-on for – it switched. Instead, you in your mind thought you're paying for streaming and adding on for DVDs.
Right. Well, plus it made it because
– it was just a mental – nothing changed in the pricing structure, but that's how people started to think about it.
And it was good for them too because, you know, as everybody knows, the selection is not quite there. I mean, not even not quite there. It's a vastly inferior selection on the streaming side.
On the movie front. TV though.
TV is pretty good, yeah. But you can't do it. It's obviously you have to wait till the DVDs come out. You're not doing it at the same time. It's not doing it next day like on Hulu or ABC.com.
Right.
But because it was cheaper and or free, you could kind of justify it. Now that it's its own service, it puts them on equal footing and people are like, wait a second, your selection isn't really there. Obviously, Netflix needs to get that selection there, which is why I think it's about, you know, bargaining with that. Because if they can
Well, I think it is. And I think really at the end of the day, I don't think they want people to purchase both services. I think they want to separate it out. Because they have users that are very DVD focused still, and they have the users that are streaming. And I think they want two groups of users. I think they really want two separate groups of users.
Oh, I think they anticipate their future being streaming only.
It is.
And I think it's going to be happening very quickly. And I think they know that the people that are DVD only, just like the people that, you know, will pay the premium for Blu-ray, that those people are, you know, in deep enough for that. And it is a good enough bargain where they'll be willing to pay a little bit extra.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. And I think that group of people, though, that are the DVD group, while it may diminish, they don't foresee it going away for quite a while.
I don't know if I agree with that.
No, that's what they said. There was a big interview with – and they were getting hammered. I can't remember who did the interview. It was a great interview with some – higher up at Netflix, and they were hammering him on this interview, like why, and one of the things that came out in this interview was that concept, that they really foresee that staying with them for a while, even if it ends up being way less than the streaming, and they want to continue it because it's easy money for them to keep. And the pricing model, the other thing that came out of this article was that their original pricing model, even though without them really confirming it, they said it was a mistake, that they should have never offered it so low like that.
Oh, I'm sure they. I'm sure. I mean,
they won't say it was a mistake, but it was a mistake.
But I don't buy the party line about. I don't buy whatever they're saying.
This was not a party line.
No,
this was
whatever,
a gaffe in the interview.
But whatever they're saying about the DVD. I think, you know, about that. Oh yeah, we're gonna keep it that for a long time. I don't think they think that at all. I think they're saying that to go, you know, to calm the masses. I don't know.
I don't think that. I mean, I think that will be around for a while. I don't think it's going to be the main bread and butter, but it's not going away. I think the streaming is going to be the primary.
Correct.
And that's going to be a side business, but it's easy money for them and they're not going to get rid of it and they're going to charge more.
Yeah. But I don't think it's going to be as entrenched as that. It sounded like did they say they expect it to be a huge market still or quickly?
No, just a profitable market.
Yeah. Because I think it's going to be going away very, very quickly. You know, because I think the reason they're getting so aggressive with this is they know if they can re-up with these new content deals in a way that gives them, you know, access to a wide variety of content, that need for the physical DVD thing will evaporate extremely quickly.
Well, I mean, it will.
Because, you know, you have like, you know, it's all about getting their services, you know, embedded in devices.
Definitely.
Because that's the thing. Like people
still use DVDs though. A lot of people. I don't, but I mean, a lot of people I know.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially like when I was back in Chicago, in the suburbs of Chicago, every single person uses Redbox. Every single person uses Netflix. I was like, wow.
Absolutely. But here's my thing.
They never stream.
When those people buy, well, because they have to get an extra box.
No, they have it built into their Blu-ray. I was surprised.
But the selection's not there. That's what I'm saying. If suddenly you can go and get access to the full DVD catalog, you're not going to go and maintain both. If you can, if it's easy to stream, if it's already in your TV or your Blu-ray that you just bought, and
yeah,
you have access
some
to the
people
full catalog,
still aren't gonna, I mean, there's still going to be a segment of people that don't do that.
Of course. And like some people aren't going to have broadband and that kind of stuff. But
right, exactly.
I think that's going to go away. I think that tipping point is very, very quickly being, you know, quickly approaching.
It is. It is.
You know?
It is.
Because I think it still feels, as easy and convenient as it is, it still feels a little bit like, you know, the redheaded stepchild. You know, mm-hmm. it's like access isn't there. It's kind of complicated. You have to get a device. It's not just turnkey like a DVD rental is, right?
You know what I did notice, which was, and this is just within this vein, different kind of thing, not Netflix itself, but when I was home, they have Comcast in Chicago. Xfinity is there. Their cable.
Worst branding. They've
changed the name.
Ever.
I was like, whatever. But I'll tell you, their on-demand selection is insane.
Yeah.
Insane. NBC shows, ABC shows, like on the same week that they've at TNT, all this in HD available right away. I was like, whoa, I can't believe it. You can get, I've never seen it like that. Amazing selection of movies, old movies, new movies. I was like, this is the dream here.
That's awesome.
All in one service, all in your cable box. I mean, like, I missed Friday Night Lights and they had, you know, they had the Friday Night Lights in HD on demand for free. What the hell?
Very cool.
Like, why can't I have that here?
Well, I mean, it's also, I mean, it's once again, it's those things people, the cable companies trying to figure out how can we go and incentivize people to keep their, you know,
it was impressive.
Keep on with their cable subscription.
Like, that was an impressive, give me that. I want that.
See,
it's the only place I've seen it that full featured. I've never seen that before.
I don't want that because that's the value added thing trying to get me to keep my cable subscription, right? Because we view TV very differently. I don't watch much TV at all. Like, you know, I don't have cable. You could not live without it, right? Like, I want to, so like, you want the value added. I don't want to have to get into the cable thing. I want to go and be able to buy stuff a la carte or get a subscription for single shows or channels,
right? I agree with you on that.
Ultimately, I think they should have both because for consumers, there are different value propositions.
Yeah. It's so hard to hit that point because, I mean, it's like, you know, there is still live TV, you know, at the end of the day. So it's hard to incorporate that. They've done a little bit with ESPN and stuff in apps like that.
Well, and NBA and MLB.
But think, you know, there's still the news and there's still shopping channels and there's still like, it's hard to say a la carte only and get rid of everything. One can do it themselves, but as a whole, it's hard to get rid of that completely because people still want that.
Yeah. Well, it's not going to happen until, you know, people eventually, you know, everything will switch over to the internet.
But how would you incorporate?
Even if it's a cable subscription, it will be. It's going to be like a FiOS thing.
Sure, sure.
But once that happens, there is no technological differentiation. You know, right. And some people, and I think eventually, I don't know. It's going to take a lot longer than I would like, but I think eventually it will go that way because maybe not. I mean, it's hard to know.
It's hard. It's hard. I mean, like, I think that 100% will be an option and a strong option, and maybe the majority.
Because the problem is, once it's an option. If it's an option, it's a value. But I don't believe.
What do you do about what do you do about like the live stuff? You know, like what is that?
You can do that. Like you can, right now, if I'm on my Apple TV, I can go and get live baseball games and live NBA games.
Right, but if
I subscribe to that service,
what about like you know the news or Jay Leno or Conan or what about that stuff?
What if
like,
NBC was a subscription channel on your Apple TV or Google TV device?
But what about the shows that are? I mean, the news that's on live. What do you do for that?
What like, if they're? I mean,
you can
what
just
if,
hit play live?
I'm saying, what if you
How
could go and
work?
Access all that stuff, via your TV? What if you didn't have to have a cable subscription with 500 channels charging you $60 a month for stuff you didn't want? What if you could just go and subscribe to NBC for $5
and they
month?
Still have their normal program plus
programming,
on demand?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That would be great.
You know, because I think
I see what you're saying. Yes.
Right now, that's not really necessarily being addressed because the live stuff is a very, very specific thing. I think sports will come first. I mean, they already are coming first. You know, to me, it's kind of, if I can get the NFL and the NCAA on some sort of subscription service that doesn't require me to have a certain cable company unless they can
just
straight up, that to me is
– I am with you on that.
That's like amazing.
I see that.
And then I think we'll see like HBO will see pay cable come first because like their model already is suited towards
it. But you're saying so like if you can – if I could subscribe to NBC, let's say, and then I get their regular schedule of programming, but I'm just paying for the one channel.
Right. I mean, that's one way it could go. I think it'll start though with specific shows.
Yes.
Like you'll subscribe to the Jay Leno show. Actually, I hope
Stop,
you would not
say that.
I hope
don't
you would. You said Leno.
I know, but it's just the first thing that came into my mind.
I would never subscribe to the Jay Leno show.
I can't stand Leno.
Scott loves Jay Leno. He's wearing a Jay Leno hat right now.
This is not true at all. I'm gonna actually throw out a shameless plug for a friend of ours.
Exactly.
Our friend Lauren has created a new show on MTV called Awkward.
Which is awesome.
It is fantastic. Have you watched it?
I have. Yeah.
I watched it. It is so good. It premieres July 19th on MTV. You can get it on – the pilot episode is online on MTV.com or their Facebook site, streaming live now. The show is great. It's. Yeah. I think it's the – MTV has been going into the scripted series realm recently, and I think by far, and I know I'm a little biased, but I have seen these other shows and some are pretty bad. This is by far the best one they've got out there.
You can say it. Teen Wolf.
Oh, Teen Wolf was so bad. I'm sorry. I did not like it. Did you watch it?
No.
It was horrible.
I saw the ads and therefore knew I didn't need to watch it.
So check it out. It's on demand streaming. So we can talk. It's tech related.
Yeah. So July 19th, 11 p.m. Eastern time.
MTV.
It's awesome. It's really, really smart and well done. And yeah, you guys will dig.
Yeah, definitely. So that's our – we got music. We got movies. We got TV. We're like on a media jaunt today.
But like let's say I could go and subscribe to Awkward for $5. And it was the whole season. Right. And like that would be fantastic because I don't want to go and watch all of MTV's programming necessarily.
Me neither.
And if the goal, right, the dream is that you can do that. You can actually go and – that's be a new
I mean, you
way.
Can, it's like you can do that through iTunes with season passes and stuff like that, but it seems uber expensive.
But buying doesn't really work, and it is expensive.
Well, and yes, I don't like the buying either.
In terms of you, because once again, don't want to. You want to watch a TV show unless it's awkward.
I don't need to watch it a million times.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I don't need to own. I mean, there are certain series, just like movies, like we've talked about, The Godfather or whatever. Or if somebody's a Star Trek fan, you want the Fight Club,
Blade Runner.
Yeah, you want to own these things. But in general, for TV shows, yes, if I could subscribe to a and I only need to watch it once. If I can subscribe to a one-time-only viewing of a season of a TV show, which we have not seen anywhere yet,
right?
That's I would be in on that in a second.
Yeah, and we're getting a little bit off the reservation, but in terms of like how it would go and change things in terms of the advertiser, you know, and how their relationship, because they're be able to target like specifically that show, that demographic. You know exactly who's listening or who's watching it. You know, whoever's like streaming it, Apple, Google, whomever knows who it is.
Yeah.
It could revolutionize that side of things as well, and best of all, it would incentivize good TV.
True,
which is like the holy grail.
Right? Do you think that something a concept like this? To bring it back around to what we were talking about, do you think a concept like this hurts Netflix? Like, can they sustain if that kind of concept takes off? Can they be the aggregator of that maybe?
It depends on it. It depends on the changes in the rest of the business.
You know what I mean?
What we're talking about, that, you know,
does it eliminate
directly,
Netflix?
What we're talking about undermines directly the business model of cable companies, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that's their whole thing is basically going and like, you know, giving you a false perception of value by, you know, charging
a billion channels and charging $100
a month. And you only want to watch four, right?
Correct.
This would go the last thing they want is people
to
be able to go and is be able to go and get exactly what they want, because then they can't go and screw you.
Right.
Netflix is so nimble. I don't think so, because they can go and be an aggregator, or they can go and get into original programming. You know, content. You know, they have the Fincher show. Eventually, it only makes sense they go that way. I think that's where Netflix is.
You know what I can see?
Like, I think that's their roadmap.
I could see Netflix being, you know, $8 a month for their main library, and then add-ons for individual shows, maybe, or even $4 a month, and then you add on individual shows, like a service fee. Basically a monthly service fee, and you know, and then there's a bunch of movies and TV shows included, or maybe old TV shows included, but new current TV shows you have to subscribe to the season.
Oh, so you can have like next day access, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, similar to a Hulu Plus, but without the freaking commercials.
Yeah, which are so bad. Do we talk about this? They added more commercials recently because there weren't enough. Really.
I do have to say, one of my coworkers has switched over to Hulu Plus from Netflix streaming because of the amount of shows. And the availability.
TV fan
gotcha. Just TV side, not movie side. And she loves it.
Well, the immediate accessibility is where Netflix really is not so – has a problem. You know,
and we'll see where that goes. I mean, it's obviously going to change.
Yeah. But yeah, we talk about this so much.
What are you going to do with this price change? Are you going to get both, or are you just going to go streaming?
I haven't decided yet. I like having the DVD as a fallback. To be honest, I never use it. I've had one
– And I mean, are you willing to pay that? That's a big jump.
And it's like, I feel like if I really need a DVD right away, it's like every now and then you'll want to go and watch like four movies in a row
for a month or something.
Well, no, you can. Cause like the truth is like right now I have the one disc plan, right? If there's ever a time where I really want to go and get three or four movies, I just upgrade, get them and then like downgrade again. And then I have them. I mean, it's like not necessarily like a nice, you know, classy move, but
you can do that.
Yeah.
Or if you really wanted to, you get the streaming only and you walk and you get a you know, Redbox movie if you needed the DVD.
I won't, because I'm never where the Redbox are.
Me neither.
I guess I
never am.
They don't have a Redbox at the grocery stores I go to, I guess. And I'm not at 7-Eleven enough. I don't know.
I think that's their big thing.
But people love the Redbox. It's so weird for me because
I've never used it.
Well, plus for me, it's like if it's on Netflix streaming, I'll go and watch it there. If it's not, I'll rent it on Apple TV. And I'm never that – you know, for me, I always know specifically what I want to watch. I'm never, you know, in that impulsive. And you never went to the video store like this way either. I never browse around and figure out what I want.
I did. I used to do that at the video store. You never did that back in the day at Blockbuster?
Back in the day. Not in the last few years.
Not since
the advent of streaming and this kind of stuff. Before, I become much more – because you already know what you want to watch, because, like, you know, you read about it online. You make a note to yourself and you want to watch that thing. It's never like – I feel like we're so much more engaged with, you know, our media. The world has changed in a way. And that's probably, I'd say, the last 4 or 5 years. Because there were definitely times it's like Friday night, what are you going to do? Let's go to Blockbuster. You just like
figure out whatever. Around there for 40 minutes and figure out a movie.
Exactly.
You know, yeah.
And then you rent Ray and you're like, okay.
I used to love doing that.
Yeah, but like I remember back in the day when I was a kid, you know, way back in the day, going to the local video store, the mom and pop stop. That was always the best. You just go around and like – most of my memories of movies aren't from theaters. They are from the video box.
Yeah, me too. I don't think I told the story on the air about what I used to do when I was younger at the local video store.
Did your dad own a video store too?
Okay. He did.
Oh, son of a God.
But that's not what I'm talking about. He did for a little while. But what I used to do is when the new movies were coming out on Tuesday or whatever day it was, I would always call – I knew the shipment came in around noon. So I would constantly call the video store basically every 30 minutes to see if the new movies came in, and then I would reserve them and ride my bike and get the new movie.
You were that kid.
Yeah, I was totally that kid.
I remember once I was a big
– That was my summer, man. I would do that every week.
I was a huge Nightmare on Elm Street fan back in the day. And I remember when 4 came out on video, I was like waiting for like a rabid, like just I needed to see it immediately, which I watched it recently. I don't know why I was rabid for that one. But anyway.
Yeah.
I remember like being at the local video store. I don't know if it was a Blockbuster at the time. May have been a Blockbuster. Was there?
We had Suncoast Video or something. I think they had that.
Oh, that was a movie memorabilia shop too.
Oh, no, not Suncoast.
They sold movies.
Sorry, West Coast Video.
Okay.
West Coast Video was the kind of local.
Yeah. Last purchases I made at Suncoast, One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest VHS and Star Wars Trilogy Laserdisc.
Oh,
the big
Laserdisc
one.
Laserdisc.
Last thing I bought at Suncoast.
Wow, that's amazing.
But I remember I was so excited for this, and like my friend Scott and I, we were just hanging around like waiting for it to come out, like the video store, and they finally wheeled them out, like, you know, like 20, you know, VHS boxes, and like it's like grabbed it, like this is it, finally it's here.
Right, I know.
Man.
I miss that.
There's something really nice about it. And once again, you know what? It was social.
It was social.
You know, and that's social. You know, how do you go and translate that experience? You know, it's go back to the Spotify thing, right?
Yeah.
How do you make movies like that?
I don't know. Especially on the rent, you know, in the rental subscription
side. Why hasn't there been more integration with Netflix and social networks?
I don't know.
Because they have there's a little thing they were going to there and a little Facebook thing they debuted at one time. And you could go and you could look at your friends' playlists.
Right.
Well, and reviews. Can you do that anymore?
What was that service you signed up for where it was kind of like a Foursquare thing but for movies?
There's several. There's GetGlue, which is really, really great. There's a bunch of these. They're check-in services and
doesn't Netflix implement something like that?
I don't know.
You've become the comedy, you know, king because you've rented these certain
badges,
movies.
All that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Gamify it.
Leads us into something else, but yeah.
That makes a ton of sense.
No, for movie rentals, I get that. I get that. I think that would be a very cool incentive.
That's very, very smart, Scott. There's also Into Now and Miso two other media ones.
I just think, I mean, like these, the secondary services for this, I don't think work as well as if they had integrated into Netflix itself. Like that, I think people would use that, don't you?
That makes complete sense.
Yeah,
why don't you do that?
I'm curious.
Why don't they do that?
And especially I know somebody that works at Netflix now, so we can ask her.
And there are several ways. I mean, especially if you're viewing it through a native application, like if you're doing it on your iPad or on your, because that's the thing, right? It's this whole thing, like, you know, apps on TVs. What do you do? You want to watch content, right? And if there's something like while you're watching content that's easy, you want to do that. You don't want to have a keyboard and mouse in front of your TV.
No, you just want to click, click, click.
Yeah. But imagine that, like imagine you're watching a TV on your Netflix, right? And you bring up your Netflix app. It syncs to your TV or device because they're both
on
Wi-Fi,
right? This is what I'm watching.
And it knows you're watching that and you go and like, then you can tweet it out right there with your phone.
Yes.
Boom. And then your friends are like, oh, that's awesome. Yes. People start commenting.
I love that. That's a great idea.
It's a really good idea.
Netflix people, listen to us.
Actually, Scott, let's stop talking about this right now. Okay, let's make this phone call to Netflix.
Yeah. Should we add this to the list of things we keep giving to the world for free?
Yeah, this will be called Operation Blueberry.
Blueberry.
Blueberry. Interesting. Tasty.
Interesting. You're making me hungry. All right, I think we should move on. Let's mention a couple of things quickly and then get to some food stuff because we both have some food stuff.
Yeah, what do you want to talk? Speaking of gamification, should we go there?
Let's go there first. Or we could wait till next week and give it some more time because it's so new. Want to tease it and then talk
about it? Let's do it now.
All right.
Let's do it now.
Okay, so.
Okay, people at home, okay, we apologize for this.
Wait. We got to talk about.
Let's do both.
You know what I'm going for, right?
Okay.
Let's do this first.
You guys have been waiting. You guys have been wondering,
talking about Netflix.
Scott and Brian, when are you guys going to go and talk about, you know, about Research in Motion again? Because you love them. We said we weren't going to talk crap. And we're not going to talk crap about anything personally.
Well, or
other phones.
This is a whole nother. Right. Yeah. We're not talking about phones.
Not at all.
So this is okay.
This is totally fine. What?
God.
You're at home. You want to watch a movie, right? What's the first thing you think? You say, man, I wish I could go and utilize that BlackBerry OS to watch a TV and watch a film on my TV at home. You soon will be able to do that.
Maybe. Yeah, Research in Motion just announced.
Not announced. It's a leak.
They said it was
prepping.
Quote unquote leaked.
A device called the BlackBerry Cyclone, which is essentially an Apple TV that's
running on the BlackBerry platform.
QNX, and it has Netflix and stuff.
How are they even planning on getting entering this market? They are not. There's no way they're going to be able to compete with Apple and Roku and TiVo. And
they have no media store. They're going to go and release a device that's BlackBerry branded, so you can use Netflix. And I guess you'll do something with your phone. Maybe they have an AirPlay thing with their phones. Maybe.
I guess that's what Roku does technically.
But Roku's a standalone company. Like, there's not
right.
like
well, exactly,
and they have a
right.
wide variety
That's
of services on Roku. It's like,
good point.
Why?
Good point.
What about BlackBerry says media at home to you?
Nothing. Nothing.
I don't want to laugh. I understand. You know what? It's smart. Okay. Here's the deal.
Listen, we have to enter Crazy Town.
But here's the deal.
To think about how BlackBerry.
But here's the deal.
And they're
also going to release 7 new handsets, right? So if they're sitting there, if QNX is their future, right? Let's think it through. Here's the thought process, right?
All right.
If QNX is their future, they want to basically hit the ground running, okay? They basically say we need to go and have everything integrated with this ecosystem. That's how Apple does it. We want to go and compete on that level. We're the same kind of thing. We do all in one hardware and software. So they say, okay, we're going to go and have these new devices because of QNX. It's going to go and be more media centric. It's going to have more abilities in that front.
They're like schizophrenic.
Well, I think. Once again, if we assume that they can't – they assume that – okay, we assume they have this great OS, right?
Right.
That is so cool it can't run unless they can get dual-core fast phones that they can't rerun now, which whether you think that's a good or bad idea, that seems to be the case.
Seems to.
And so they say our new phones with our new OS is going to be very media-centric, and we want to make it competitive with iPhone, Android. And so they want to – you know, at launch, they want to be able to go and have maybe – and you know, an AirPlay-like feature. So you can get your phone, you can have photos on your QNX BlackBerry, you can stream them to your TV, and it's the all-in-one situation, you know, a solution ready to go against iOS and Android. In that sense, it makes sense.
It does.
The problem
for
is,
another company.
Well, it makes – you're right.
Problem is that they're
– because that's not – and that's not how people think of them.
Right.
Right. Because they can come out with an integrated solution covering all these things, and I'm still going to be like, you guys are the BlackBerry guys.
You know what would be kind of brilliant for them if they did, if they had the guts to do it, would to actually completely rebrand the company.
Just ditch BlackBerry?
Yeah.
The problem with the BlackBerry brand, that's a good point because it's
– you know?
You think
of it – because it has gotten to this point, like they would be smart to do a little restructure, completely rename and rebrand. They may have a chance.
Because what do you think of a new BlackBerry? The first thing you think when you – like what comes to mind device-wise?
Email, the bold. BlackBerry bold email.
Period. Or like I think of the blue, the old school blue one, and then like
or
the
that,
new
yeah.
ones. And like
I mean, that's the same form factor.
Email and that's it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I mean and that's why this is so confusing to me because in the la-la land that they live in, these execs
– don't be a jerk, dude. It's called Canada.
the big
don't
thing
don't
on their mind is
in Canada.
Security, battery life, blah, blah, blah. And that's always what they've like preached, right? They've always preached this.
Those are important, and those are important features for enterprise.
Sure.
Yeah.
Partially, not in full, but then they go and then start talking about this. They don't know what kind of company they want to be. That's the problem.
I think their DNA is business and enterprise and a very limited feature set. And now they're in a market where they have to go and compete on a broader field. And they're simply just not – I think at the top, they're just not suited for
it. You know what's interesting, though? If you think about it, BlackBerry back in the day, when they first started coming out with phones, right? They had that blue one and they had their very industrial standard business devices and they were business, right? And they were a successful company. They were successful. They weren't the be-all, end-all. Because at the end of the day, they're a relatively new company. At the end of the day, in the scheme of things. Then they took that first step and went into the consumer market. They hadn't done that at all. And they did it. And they went consumer. And they were headed in the right direction. And they pretty much exploded. Mm-hmm. But they didn't learn anything from that. Like they kept that going. And then they're like, but that's not our bread and butter. That's not – it's the business and the enterprise people and the blah, blah, blah. But they don't realize that the reason the company exploded was that when they became this user-friendly, we're going to sell to everybody, you know, the home user market. And and that is what took them from one level to the next. And it's like it didn't register.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It depends on how you look at it.
It makes me angry.
What made them successful? I think what made them successful with consumers is that ease of BlackBerry email and push email. Remember when it first came out, nobody else had push email on their devices.
True.
It was actually just new. And it wasn't necessarily a matter of, you know, them succeeding because of they were consumer friendly. It's just become they had the only product on the market in a lot of ways.
Right.
You know, for consumers that you could actually easily get and all this kind of stuff. And I think, you know, it was an all-in-one solution. Maybe you got that BlackBerry TMO.net address, but you could go and get it. Everybody had them because it was just easy and it was just email on to go. Yeah. And that actually helped portable email blow up.
But you didn't even see it.
It wasn't
the stores.
They've never had a consumer-friendly presence, and those devices were not ever necessarily consumer-friendly. And you have to – I mean, there's a great article. I mean, I know you read it as well on the Boy Genius Report, interview with some anonymous sources, you know, within the company.
Right.
And it kind of bore out that they're, you know – from a leadership perspective, the things that they see as being important are battery life, reliability, you know, security.
And listen, those are things, but
they simply
stopping somebody from getting an iPhone.
But they simply don't. They didn't, and seem to still don't realize that people want full featured computers, not single use devices.
Well, that's the thing. Like they think, oh, I can rock my BlackBerry for 48 hours without charge, which is not exactly true, but they have really long battery life.
Sure.
My iPhone gives out after 10 hours or 8 hours. I'm going to stay with my BlackBerry. That's not the mindset. Nobody thinks that.
No.
Nobody thinks that.
Well, and what you see people who have BlackBerries and leave them for work, and they also carry an iPod or a secondary device
of some
sort.
I know a lot of people that do that.
And it's, you know, that doesn't really work. And I love that this – I don't love that it leaked now because it seems ludicrous right now given what their products that are out.
Correct.
If their strategy is to go and create
do what you're saying
a full ecosystem and they're going to hit it
maybe
right at launch,
some
ready to go, that is actually really, really smart and kind of awesome.
I mean, if they do
but
that –
But I think if it was a different brand, I think it would be smart for them to brand it differently. I agree.
That's what I mean. Like if they really rebranded and even if they did something where it's like new company name powered by RIM.
Yeah. Or powered by BlackBerry.
Or powered by BlackBerry.
Yeah.
You got – they got – I mean you can keep that for brand recognition but give us something new so we don't think – we don't have the stigma of BlackBerry devices.
Yeah. Like call it like, you know, Monolith, you know, email powered by BlackBerry, or you know what I mean?
That would be brilliant.
And you're like, oh, that's a cool name and like it's neat.
Research
and
Motion, listen to us.
Because
we
you
want
know,
you to succeed, man.
Because they've done that. They do so much good but yeah. I hope that is what they're doing. The problem is right now.
Were there any more specs on this supposed device?
I mean, it's going to have YouTube and Netflix, and that was kind of it. It was just, you know, the same kind of, you know, is what you would expect.
It's like an Apple TV. I mean,
yeah.
Apple TV, Roku, the same kind of thing.
But if they don't come with a media store and if they don't come with devices, it doesn't really matter. I mean, truthfully, the problem is here's the real problem. It's not the Apple TV does not sell iPhones.
Correct.
The iPhone sells Apple TVs.
Absolutely.
You know,
you are right.
And so they can't really go and use this to leverage more sales. They need to go and come out with a product first. And it's good that they're offering the complete solution because they do need that to compete.
Yeah.
So I applaud them for that. And I think it's really smart. But I don't – once again, it goes back. Their problem is with their messaging, their products, you know.
Time will tell. And time will tell
what they
soon,
see the market
man.
As.
Yeah. I mean it's only a matter of time before they make a good move or they're gone.
Yeah. Well, 6 months was the latest. It's going to be 6 months. The board is giving, like, I think investors are giving 6 months to kind of for the two CEOs to prove that they needed to have two CEOs.
I actually saw that. I was actually pretty surprised that happened, that they allowed that. But I mean, it shows that they have faith in these guys, but it doesn't mean that they're just as delusional as them.
Well, it's the same guys that, you know, those two guys, you know, brought the company up from the get-go.
Like, I know.
You know, like, they've been visionaries before.
I mean, all this frustration that Brian and I have. I mean, I think you both you and I, we you know, I have an affinity for BlackBerry, and I really want them to.
And plus, it's like the more good platforms out there, the better it is for smartphones.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not good.
I mean, these are themes we touch on all the time.
Yeah. It's like, it's not good if it's just Apple and Android, or just, you know, and like in WebOS is flailing and RIM is, you know, tanking. It's like, it's better for everybody if, you know, there's competitive things, new ideas, new features, innovation being introduced into the marketplace.
Correct.
You know, as neat as it is to go on, you know, to run, you know, an iOS versus Android, you know, narrative, you know, every single week.
It's great to have both of them.
It's better for my device if there are, like, you know, multiple players, you know.
See. Yeah. Agreed. So there's our little reprieve from our reprieve about BlackBerry.
But we'll see. Like I said, if they do come with a full featured solution, I think that will be great, and I hope they do.
Yeah, that's it. I hadn't thought of it that way. So I'm curious to see that too.
So anyway, you are back from Chicago. You have some more food tales, I know.
I do. So I teased this last week, and this is going to be my main thing. I'm trying to think if I had something. I feel like I had something else with what I was going to talk about, this restaurant and something else, but I can't remember. So there's a restaurant in Chicago called The Girl and the Goat. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So The Girl and the Goat is Stephanie Izzard, winner of Top Chef. This restaurant is a hot spot. It's a over 3 month reservation list to get into this place. And it's not like a uber fancy, you know, you have to get dressed up and sit down. It's just that good.
I hope if it has a goat in the title, you can't get dressed up.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Correct. And it's a upscale casual restaurant, right? This was an awesome dining experience. You know, it's the food is kind of tapas style. So you order a bunch of things and you share, you know, everything that you get. So I'm going to just talk about a couple of standout dishes. I put a couple of things on food spotting. I'll put some more, from The Girl and the Goat. So standout dishes. One of the things I ate, which was, there are two things that were strange, right? And good. One was goat belly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm just going to.
Do you want to comment on that?
No, I'm just going to wait to hear what you have to say.
So goat belly was, it was very similar to pork belly. Okay. It was delicious. It was tender. It was the taste. I'm trying to figure out what the taste was to describe. It's actually hard to describe because it did taste very similar to pork belly, but it wasn't a pork flavor. So almost like a lamb meshed with a pork belly. Like pork belly texture, lamby kind of taste. Really hard to describe.
Are a lot of the dishes there goat?
No. There's actually there's a goat menu of like a handful of goat dishes. But no, the majority of them aren't. Like that's kind of the specialty. And every week they change up the menu and have different goat dishes on there. So and a couple of them are staples. Like I think the goat belly is always on there. And it was unique and actually fantastic. It was fantastic. It was a taste that I hadn't tasted before. And I got to give them credit for that. You know, it was really, really, really good. So that was one of the...
How was it prepared?
You know what? I cannot remember. It was very, it was pretty simple. You know, on the plate, I can't remember the sauce because I went online and their menu changes so often. I didn't take a picture of the menu, which I forgot to do. So I don't remember the exact preparation, but anyway,
okay.
It was delicious. It was delicious. One of the other standouts, surprisingly, and I actually want to pull it up so I can tell you exactly what it was a vegetarian dish. Go figure at a place called The Girl and the Goat.
Right.
So it was roasted cauliflower with pickled peppers, pine nuts, and mint.
That sounds awesome.
It was one of the dishes where every bite you had flavor exploding.
Well, I bet the texture with the pine nuts was amazing.
It was great. It was so unique. And so everyone at the table, we couldn't stop eating it. And I'm like, how is this? This is like the best dish on the menu at The Girl and the Goat, you know, roasted cauliflower. It was so amazing. It was so amazing. So if anybody goes there and you're worried like, oh, I don't eat meat, they got plenty of stuff that's not there. There was a beet salad that was delicious. But this one, this thing just stood out. It was crazy. So another thing I ate, and this is just the name itself. I'm going to tell you what it was called, Brian. And
please do, Scott.
And then you're gonna react. Okay?
Okay.
Ready? I ate something called the Roasted Pig Face.
You know, that's a really good band.
Ooh, Roasted Pig Face.
No, just Pig Face.
Oh, is there a band called Pig Face?
There was. It's actually a collective of like industrial music artists, basically. Martin Atkins, Trent Reznor's in it. You know, the song Suck? That was a Pig Face song originally.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. So, Roasted Pig Face. Now, when you see this on the menu, you're like, am I going to order it? What is this? It is not actually a pig's face. You're not eating a pig's face.
That is a big letdown.
I know, right? And I thought I was being really adventurous when I ordered it. I'm like, you know what? I'm ordering it. I'm here. I'm going to talk about Roasted Pig Face.
Honestly, to name it that and not have it deliver is kind of bullshit.
Well, I guess it looks like a pig face is why they do that.
Oh,
so
whatever.
It's like patties of some sort of pork or something. And then it's got, sunny side up eggs over it. So when you look at it, it looks like a pig's face, if you look at it just right. It was really good, though. It was really good. But I thought it was being so adventurous. I was, and everybody at the table was like, you're not going to order that. I'm like, of course I'm going to order that.
I don't care if it tastes good.
You know who you're talking to?
This dish sucks just because of the tease and the name.
But it was good. It was so good. I'm serious. It was so good. Yeah. So we had, you know, also I was saying the roasted beet salad with green beans, white anchovy, avocado creme fraiche. So good. Like really the veggie, I was very surprised, but I guess it's kind of like farm fresh theme a little bit, right. You know, I was surprised at how amazing the vegetarian dishes were. And it's kind of smart that it's not all goat centric menu. Like
right.
It's a full menu and then there's a separate goat menu of like four dishes. So it's kind of the novelty on top of the restaurant almost. Also, they do a cool thing where you order a bread. Mm-hmm. And it's fresh baked bread, which is delicious. And then it comes with like different dipping sauces or spreads for the bread. And it was really cool. They had this like mushroom butter, basically mushroom soup butter. So it tasted like mushroom soup on the bread. So it was almost like you're dipping bread into mushroom soup. It was so good and unique and different. And you kind of think that's a little molecular gastronomy, but not really. Not really. It's just a flavored butter. But a very smart way to do it, because I dip my bread in soup all the time to clean
it.
And
it creates an experience.
Yeah, and so you recreate that with a spread. Very smart, you know, very smart and very cool. At the end of the meal, we had some awesome desserts like a chocolate cake, and they were great. It wasn't like – I'm not going to say, oh, this is the place to go for dessert, but they're really delicious. And I have some cool pictures.
Yeah. What did you have on the dessert menu?
The chocolate cake was the – you know.
Main one.
Was kind of the winner. What else did we have? We had it was a bittersweet chocolate cake or something. They had some pork fat donuts, which was pretty. Those were really good. This actually was really good. It was a goat cheese. It's called a goat cheese Bavarios. It's like brown sugar cake, blueberries, and like a caramel sauce. Like a salted caramel.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good.
Sounds good.
It's really good. Yeah. I mean, it was great. I have pictures of that too. At end of the meal, I said to the our waiter, I was like, please send my compliments to the chef. And he said, well, would you like to come meet her? And I said, oh yeah, that would be fantastic. And she was there expediting the whole night. So he brought me up. I got to shake her hand, say thank you very much. I had a wonderful meal. It was really... I mean, you know, I've done that at restaurants before, and I'm really just doing it because I want to tell them we had a great meal, and they don't hear it all the time. So, by the way, if you go to restaurants and do that, it's a nice thing for the chefs to hear.
Definitely.
You know, even if it's not like the head chef that's there, having people send just, you know, good wishes back to the kitchen, they always appreciate that, you know. And so, you know, I try to do that if I have a great meal. I did not expect that, and it was very cool. And my friend Andy's wife, Robin, was there, and she really wanted to meet Stephanie. Like, that was her dream not her dream, but she was so excited. So I grabbed her with me and we went and shook her hand and said thank you. And it was a really wonderful experience. So 3 month wait, I think it's worth it. Luckily, you know, we just randomly made this reservation when I decided I might be coming to Chicago that week, and it turned out great.
Very cool.
So girl and the goat, baby.
All right.
Chicago, Illinois. Also, another little shameless plug. If you're in Chicago, my brother and my best friend have two restaurants called Paradise Cantina, one at State and Division and one on Division in Wicker Park. If you want good, you know, Cabo style
margaritas,
and awesome cheap Mexican food. It's a place to go. You know, it's not like gourmet Mexican food. This is like the you know, drink a margarita, have some tacos and awesome quesadillas and watch sports games play. So check it out if you're in Chi-Town. It's a
great football awesome place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great. I mean, they have so many TVs. Like, this is the place to go to watch a game, especially if you're in Chicago watching the any of the awesome Cubs. Well, the Cubs. Bears. Blackhawks, White Sox. Okay, White Sox are doing well.
High five.
But if you're in Chicago, it doesn't matter because you like them all. Yeah. So anyway.
One quick thing and then we're going to wrap it up. This week, there's a restaurant here in LA called Ludo Bites, which is it's a great restaurant. It's basically a pop-up restaurant where – and I'm going to mess up the pronunciation on this name. I always do. It's Ludo Lefebvre.
Sure.
Basically, he was a chef on Top Chef many seasons ago, and he basically runs a pop-up restaurant where once every 6 to 8 months, he will take over a single location, pre-existing location in Los Angeles. And he will go in, like, for 1 month, he will go in, like, he will serve dinner at that restaurant. And it's amazing, innovative, you know, French-oriented cuisine, but it's very, very innovative. There's some, like, molecular gastronomy stuff going on, so he switches stuff up. Scott and I have been a couple times. It's really, really great. But it's such a thing that basically every single time they have all their invites, the reservations, rather, go on sale at the same time via OpenTable usually. And it's correct. Become kind of a thing because it is so hard to get reservations for this place. And the food really is impeccable. Like, every single time I've gone has been a different and unique experience. And this stuff you would not – he really thinks outside
flavors
the box.
And tastes that you don't think about and you don't think are going to work.
And he combines them in ways that you would never anticipate, and they always work. So Scott and I were very excited because this year for this one, this Ludo Bites 7007, as he is calling it, they went on sale Thursday at 4 p.m. Scott and I both tried to go and get reservations at 4 o'clock. By 4 o'clock and 30 seconds, they were sold out.
And here's what happened to me. I was livid. I got in.
This is funny.
I chose a reservation. It locked me out and I couldn't confirm.
And I couldn't confirm.
And this was great.
I took a screen cap of this.
You sent me a screenshot.
I was
basically
mad.
It was the confirmation page, and there was like it's referenced like, you know, you're supposed to hit a continue button or something, and there actually was no continue button.
Right, right. Eventually the continue button came up, and by the time it came up, I couldn't even.
Oh, it did?
I tell you that. Eventually it came up like an hour later because I left it on the damn page. I'm like, this thing's not going away.
It was funny. It literally took about 20 minutes for the page to come up in the first place.
Yeah.
And Scott and I are on IM the entire time going back and forth, and I'm like, it's over, dude. He's like, oh, no, I will not relent. I will not stand down.
And eventually it popped up. I was so mad. I posted it on Ludo's Facebook page, the picture. Well, the funny thing is what I did.
You never get angry about anything.
No, never, never.
Food related, never.
Never. I posted a picture and I accidentally put it up with my name and phone number and email address. I was like, oh, I took it down right away and blacked it out.
That's when you stop, take a breath, breathe.
But I wanted them to see because they probably read that page every now and then.
Well, the problem is they've done this every
year.
They don't
care.
Well,
I know.
You know, OpenTable isn't geared for having like, you know, thousands of people try to hit it at once for like, you know, a big block of reservations. And every year this happens.
They should do it a better way.
Well, in a sense, it's good for the restaurant because it becomes that, you know, it's like Google Plus. It's like, you know, Spotify. It's that exclusivity thing. The problem with that is I don't like the red velvet rope when I'm on the outside.
No.
You know, it's no fun that way.
Never. Never.
So it's a bummer. But we're still working. Hopefully, we want to go and bring you a review because that's honestly that's my favorite food experience in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Hopefully one of us will get invited by
we're feeling some stuff out,
but also they do cancellations and they do another day of reservations, so maybe we can.
And if you are curious, that is I believe on the 18th.
It's a month of
is it July or August?
The actual dining?
It's no, the reservation on sale.
Oh, it's soon. It's I don't remember. Ludo.
We don't have it in front of us, but it's within the next couple of weeks, I believe. If you want to go to ludobites.com, they'll have the information there. So if you do want to try something neat, they will have more reservations, you know, cancellations going up. Check it out.
By the way, and I haven't read this yet, but I just did a Google search for Ludo Bites, and I'm curious to read this article, so I'm going to tell people to read it. But on the LA Weekly blog, there's an op-ed that says an open letter to OpenTable regarding Ludo Bites. So I'm very curious as to what this says.
Because I love OpenTable as a service.
So do I. They're fantastic.
But once again, they're great for if somebody's looking for – one person's looking for one reservation.
They're not built for something like this.
Yeah, they're not – exactly. It's like, and it makes sense. They're not going to, you know, create a whole new infrastructure just for
Ludo. You know what? They know they're not built for this. So, you know, Ludo should figure out a different way to utilize OpenTable.
break it up or something. Do a handful one day, handful the next day. I don't know.
I feel both ways. It's like for, part of me goes, it's great for the buzz for his restaurant. So why would he change? Also, why would I get frustrated as a customer that would like to go and experience, you know, what he's putting together this time?
Sure, that's true. Yes. That's true. So that's what we got.
That's what we got, people. Thank you for joining us this week. Hope you enjoyed the show.
Thank you very much.
If you like what you hear, please give us a rating on iTunes. It's the best way for new listeners to find the show.
We're
also on Stitcher Radio and, like, you know, all your favorite podcast resources. We are everywhere.
And if you haven't already, like us on Facebook and please, you know, share us with your friends to like us on Facebook. We're, you know, we just want to get more and more listeners. What am I saying?
You want to go videos, very
we
clear.
Want more people listening to the show.
Yeah.
So,
and so
know,
all
you've been
listening,
peeps.
Yeah, we appreciate your support and checking everything out. And yeah, thanks for joining us. I'm Brian.
I'm Scott.
Take care.